Hello and welcome to Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. I'm Kevin with my brother Brandon, and we are excited that you have joined us again to listen to our thoughts on whatever it is we're going to talk about.
Yes, it's good to hear your voice, Kevin. It's good to talk to you today. And we did have actual people who listened. I was delighted and amazed. And so, as we threatened, we're back for more. Let's start today. Let's check in a little bit. I know that it feels like everything in life is about coronavirus at the moment. And so let's see, is there anything noteworthy going on for you that's not about that? Or maybe it is about that. It's still noteworthy and you want to mention it. How are you doing?
I think I'm doing okay. It's still kind of coming together how to properly manage time.
Yeah.
But I think I've got some better ideas on how to do that now.
It's good. It's good. Are you, for me, this is, I'm going to tell you, this is day 7 of me not going to a job. So I went 7 days ago, and then I haven't had to go back since then, and there's no need for me to go this week. And this feels really weird. I'm not going to lie. I don't remember the last time I wasn't on vacation and had 7 days that I didn't have to go to work. So are you guys
so your adjustment?
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Your adjustment is, I think we may have touched on this before, your adjustment is a dual adjustment.
Yeah, it is two things at once.
There's two new realities that have kind of become interwoven.
Yes.
And so you're trying to figure them both out.
Right. And I think the one, like, emotionally I'm thinking about the fact that, okay, so I don't have that job, and now I'm going to be doing a different role for that company, and I'm going to be doing, as my main focus, supporting Zach especially, but Zach and Josh. And, but again, with Christy around the house too, because she can't go to work, even that feels like it's sort of in this in-between state. And so I'm not exactly clear how I'm doing with all of that yet. It feels like I will probably have some later point, assuming everything goes back to normal at some time, where I'm going to have to then reckon with, well, how does that actually feel now? So, I don't know. Let me ask you this. Is everybody in your house, are they finding places to go and get away from each other when they need to?
Yes. So the kids now, this week, have started with online schooling.
Okay.
So they're doing some classroom work with their classmates and teacher via like Zoom. So they are going to separate corners, one staying in the room, their bedroom. The other one is downstairs in the living room at a family computer. And so they're finding a little bit of space with that. And it's, to a large degree, that's kind of how they divide themselves anyway.
Okay.
When they're home. So it's not that much different. I think the bigger issue isn't so much finding a space for themselves. It's being comfortable in that space for such a long period of time.
Yeah.
There's just not yet that, you know, kind of the skill to productively occupy themselves for, you know, what, 14 hours a day.
Yes.
Without, you know, being as strictly scheduled. And it's not going to be as strictly scheduled. As much as there's going to be classroom time now through, at least through the next month, we're off of school at least through April 30th.
Yeah. Yeah, we are too. Well, actually, we're out. They've said they're not going back to school for the rest of the school year. So.
Right. So as much as there's going to be schooling taking place, it is obviously a far less structured school environment.
Right.
So that's my trust, is that they're going to settle into that better, the teachers, the kids, and it's all going to develop its own rhythm, just like going to a classroom every day had developed its own rhythm. But I think that's still going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah. So at our house, Joshua is doing a lot of what he already does in his day program at the art center, and he's just doing it in his room. So he's doing doll construction in particular. He's just up there all day. He's making patterns. He's sewing. He's stuffing. He's doing all this stuff. And he's just, you know, it's kind of getting him out of his room every once in a while to not become a hermit.
Right. But I think that's similar, you know, whether or not it's getting them to leave the room.
Yeah.
Or getting them to leave an activity that they find easy to settle into. It's the same struggle.
Yeah.
You know, whether they're a hermit in a room or a hermit in their mind or in their activity, you're trying to avoid that kind of monoculture of place or
right.
brain space.
Exactly. And so then, Zachary's used to a lot of schedule. And so my role is to try to give that boy as much schedule as I can mm-hmm. all day, and help him keep running with that. And then Christy is the one who's actually got a job and is trying to do her job from home. So that's lucky for her. Very exciting, I'm sure.
Seen her job develop, because she's transitioning from a part-time to full-time, right?
Yeah.
At the same time as now she's not going into the office.
Right. So she went to full-time and goes to the office less. That's normal. Yeah.
So there's a lot of transitions that are really going to lead to transitions again somewhere down the road.
Somewhere down the road. Yeah, exactly.
All right. So do you want to, this is your topic, so why don't you introduce it?
Yeah. So I was thinking about, the idea of, let me come at it this way. I listen to other podcasts, or I read websites, or I look at different things, and one of those common topics at the moment is, you're home, you've got this extra time on your hands, here are the things you should get into that you've never gotten into. Here are the 10 essential shows that you haven't been watching, or mm-hmm. here are 3 albums that you didn't know about, or here are books that came out last year, whatever it is. It's all this different stuff. And I realized that the crisis situation, or the emergency situation that we found ourselves in, is not the emergency situation we'd always been preparing for. Because people always talk about what would you take with you to a desert island? What would be your desert island discs, right? What would be the stuff you would take if you could only have a few things? But instead, we have all our stuff. We have access to, unless your main way of being entertained is professional, any sports actually, you don't have that. But all the other kinds of media-driven entertainment, books and magazines and movies and TV and radio and podcast, you have all of it. You got access to all of it. And so it's like this, it's still too much. It's still this enormous amount of thing. And what I found myself, what I started to realize is that I'm actually not as interested in diving into a whole bunch of new stuff, but I've been thinking about what the stuff is that is like my media comfort food, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the stuff that I'm gravitating to that's familiar, that are old favorites that I'm digging out to rewatch or re-listen to or play again or things like that? And so I thought maybe we could talk about that. I'd be really interested to see if you have a sense of what the stuff is that you're returning to. What's been the comfort food part of your media diet over the last couple of weeks?
Well, I have found nothing comforting.
Okay.
What I have been doing is I was listening to more, I'm listening now to more jazz again. I had listened to, I go through these phases, and I went through a very long phase of predominantly listening to bop era jazz.
Sure.
And I just kind of gravitated away from that. But I have been trying to come back to that. But I'm having a difficult time doing so. I picked up a book that I've read in the past that I enjoyed. I was having a difficult time reading that. It's like I'm having a difficult time putting things that I already know into this context.
Oh, that's interesting. So does that, so are you, but you are finding it easier to try something new? Are you, or are
Maybe a
you
little
finding,
easier, but still not easy. Like I've sat down to watch a new show, and I can't watch more than like 10 minutes of TV at a time. I just lose all ability to pay attention to it. I get frustrated with the process of sitting, and so I turn it off and I go on to something else. That's been for me overall, it's been very frustrating because I'm not settling into something that will use up my time in a stimulating way.
Are there
You know,
things that you've been able to find that you can do that you can do for more extended chunks of time? If it's not, getting into music or a book or TV or something like that, is there something else that you can immerse yourself in at all, or is immersion of anything really difficult right now?
I think of anything as difficult. I mean, early on, like napping, I was able to do that. That reached a point where, that was obviously something that needed to be moderated. So I don't have that. And that was, I mean, napping is an effective time killer,
Yeah, sure is. It is.
unfortunately. So if I take that off the table, there's a lot more space to fill.
But at the same time, it's funny you say that. I was thinking about this, that we often talk about how, as a culture, there are a lot of studies that show that as a culture, we don't get enough sleep. We certainly don't get as much sleep as people did historically. And we probably don't get it as much as it would be healthy for us. And if we ever had a time to reset some of our sleep habits, maybe this would be it.
Right, I think the problem with that is going to be because I've seen discussion, read discussion along those lines that now is the time to fix patterns, whether it's health patterns, sleep patterns, patterns of, socioeconomics. The difficulty being with many of those, unless some of the larger patterns of how our culture works change, all of those other changes are going to be difficult to maintain, I would think. Sure, if you find yourself, gosh, I can get 9 hours of sleep a day now. I sleep 8 hours at night, I get an hour nap or 2 half-hour naps, or I get an just a half hour nap, whatever. You're going to find most likely that then when you're back in a workplace, when you're back with having to drive your kids to and from school, whatever the case may be, the time for that isn't going to exist any longer, or the opportunity for that is not going to exist.
Sure.
So this is more like a temporary healing situation than it is an opportunity to make some of those larger changes that might offer some, prolonged benefits. I mean, I think there are still things we can learn. We can change patterns. There's enough time to change our way of doing certain things, or to kind of rearrange what has, is of dominant importance to us. I just think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to just have to fall right back into exactly what they were doing before.
Maybe. So, okay, so let me push back on it in this way, because I think you're right that the places where we're using time that's normally dedicated to something that's been taken away right now. Like if you normally mm-hmm. go to school, you normally go to a job, you normally, all of those kind of things. Yes, at some point, those things are going to come back. And those things are going to be seeking their old time slots back. And so you're right. It won't work to go back to your job and say, hey, boss, I discovered that at 1 o'clock, like a half hour nap does me great. So I'm going to be out for that time and then I'll be back. That's not going to work. But on the other hand, like what if I find that I just go to bed instead of staying up and trying to catch up on one more thing or watch one more thing or read one more thing, you know, or, you know, if I just say, okay, well, I can just go to sleep and I let myself get a reasonable night's sleep. Maybe I get used to that. And then when all of those other things want their time slots back, well, then we have a decision to make. And I think this is where I'm sort of taking issue a little bit, because you were saying, you know, all those things are just going to have to go back to normal. But there are things within that, again, 16, 18 hours, however many hours of a day you're thinking about, there are a bunch of choices that we make. So it may be that we find that we like getting 8 hours of sleep instead of six. And we decide to spend two fewer hours on entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I wonder about that. That's the sort of thing that I'm thinking. I mean, there could be room for us to... it's sort of like the sabbatical thing. You know, I mean, it was 10 years ago that I got to take a sabbatical, right? And we had the summer. We did a lot of refreshment. I did some research. We had a chance to recharge and really think about patterns and some things. And then you go back into life. And at the front end of it, I thought, oh, I'm going to have a chance to really rethink a lot of stuff. And it wasn't the case. But I did have the chance to rethink a couple of things. So I think it would, if we look at it and say, oh, yeah, we can come out the other side and you know, make all this is the time to make all these changes, then we're probably going to disappoint ourselves. We're probably going to do like somebody who makes a page worth of New Year's resolutions. But
right.
If we do, like, let the time, like, let the day sort of speak to us and, you know, sleep when you're tired. Go to bed instead of stay. You know, I think about how many, I don't know, you and I do sleep differently. I know that. We've talked about how, you've had trouble sleeping at different times. But I think that a lot of the times that I don't get enough sleep because I'm staying up trying to watch one other thing or like, oh, I've got, you know, three things on the DVR that I wanted to see. And, you know, I'm trying to jam in one more thing.
Well, yeah. And that is largely where my issue comes as well. And then even if I decide I'm not going to try and do this thing, or I'm not going to try and make up for this lost time, I still find that, you know, the ability then to calm down and transition to something else, I end up like in a middle state. I'm not going to get up and do whatever this other thing is, read a book, watch TV, try and load the dishwasher, do whatever. But then going to sleep does not come either. There's not, like, for me, there's not a settled space in my head.
Sure.
That, you know, that it's, if there was a black and white, I'm either sleeping or doing this other thing, that would be easy.
Yeah.
Certainly would be easier for me.
No, that makes sense.
I mean, I would think it would be great. It would be fabulous if all sorts of changes happen for individuals that are positive for them. And if those changes drive larger cultural changes that are healthy for people as a whole, I mean, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's the hope. We want to hope for some good things to come out of this, right?
Sure, sure. But I think that if we set ourselves up and we think, oh, we're going to change everything, you're more likely going to change nothing than at that point.
Right, you're right.
Whereas on the other hand, if you like think about one or two things strategically, and I was thinking about this earlier today. I was actually at Target, Why was I out? Because I have a 16-year-old with autism who literally can't stay in the house. So we go for long neighborhood walks and stay 6 feet away from people. And so while we were on our long neighborhood walk, he realized that at the end of the street we were on, when I say the end, I mean like 3/4 of a mile down, is Target.
Still the end, yeah.
Yeah, he began to run for Target.
Good man.
That bummed me out so much because I was carrying a cup of coffee at the time. So I tried to get him to stop. I'm like yelling. This is the kind of parenting that never gets old, right? I'm watching him run away from me and I'm yelling at him, Zach, come back. Zach, stop. Zach, no, it's not happening. He's running. So finally, I realized I had to abandon the last half of my cup of coffee, which put me in a bad mood. And then I had to chase him. But at that point, we were on our way and we were heading there. So we get to Target. He wants to walk around and look at, he's looking at things that he wants. And so we're just taking pictures. Because we're like, no, we're not buying anything right now. Just take a picture of it. We'll remember later. And so as we're then walking to go out of the store, we walk by an aisle. I realized there was a singular office supply that I needed. So I poked my head into the office supply aisle to see if they had it. And they didn't. But I saw rows of Moleskine notebooks. And I thought to myself, I am one of those people who always says that if I had more time, I would be journaling. And I am not journaling.
I read where someone commented that that it's, I think it was, oh, I forget her name. She commented that it's time to accept the fact that she is not the person who she thought she was.
Yeah.
That having more time is not going to be the thing that, lack of time has not been the barrier to entry into a richer life.
And I guess that's what I'm thinking about. So I'm like, I realized, okay, I'm not journaling. So maybe I should stop pretending that that's just because I don't have enough time. Because I have time now. I mean, I don't have a lot of time now because, again, having a special needs kid cooped up in the house all day is not a low energy activity. But I do have different time than I used to have. I'm still not doing it. But that's why I'm thinking about, something, maybe it's like one strategic thing. Maybe somebody thinks, well, maybe I'll add that one thing with the time that I have. Or I'll do this one thing differently. Maybe how I start my morning, how I end my day, whatever it might be. And then we'll just see.
It was Anna Kendrick, by the way.
Ah, Anna Kendrick.
I should properly give credit.
I always thought she was exactly who she seemed to be. That's a disappointment. Okay. Well,
she is who we thought she was.
All right. Yeah, she should.
A Dennis Green reference?
That's, if I had a nickel for every time someone mashed up Dennis Green and Anna Kendrick. Wow. So tired, Kevin.
Now, I don't listen to any podcasts. This is perhaps scandalous, but.
Oh, no, I'm talking about just like in major, like on the news.
I'm leading to something.
Oh, sorry.
Is it appropriate if you say something you're not sure your audience would, understand, a point of reference that may elude them, to explain that point of reference?
I think it is, yes. I'll tell you also, I think there are two things that you could do. One is you could explain it. The other, this is actually something that one of the hosts on the Cat and Cloud podcast did that I really liked. I don't know if she does it all the time. I've only heard her do it on one episode. But in one episode, when she went back and did the editing later, when she had raised a question, or I think at one point she shared a piece of information that turned out to be inaccurate, all of a sudden her voice pops in and she goes, "Hi, this is future Carol. I'm going to correct something that past Carol said, and here's the correct information." So she did that. So, I think you could explain now, or future Brandon could edit that in after.
Well, here's what we're going to do. And we'll introduce this here. We have a Facebook page.
Yeah.
At Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. And what we will do is, I'm sure I can find a link on YouTube to the press conference in which said Dennis Green makes the statement of
they are who we thought they were.
So
yes.
So that'll be a reference point.
Yes, and if you don't know that that reference, folks, go watch that clip. You'll enjoy that. And if you do know that reference, you already will go watch that clip because you know you'll enjoy that. So basically the advice here is everybody go to the Facebook page, find the clip, and watch it. There you go.
So what have you been finding is something that you're returning to?
Yeah, so I have been, and again, in some ways I'm still super busy because keeping Zach out of Christie's hair all day is a job. But when I have been having some time, I found a couple of things that I wanted to get back into on TV. And I'm not usually somebody that rewatches TV, but I also didn't want to just like keep adding on a bunch of new stuff because I realized, again, in the future, I probably won't have time to do that. So I'm the kind of person, usually I've got like a couple of shows that I'm really interested in at any given moment. And I thought, well, if I get into like 10 shows right now, there's no way I'm going to keep up with that afterwards. And I'm just going to be irritated. So I was thinking about it. And I was like, what is something that I really just enjoyed? I just enjoyed the way people did it. I haven't started watching it, but I believe in the next couple of days, I will start rewatching Justified.
I have never seen that.
You've never seen Justified, but you should. I would say this is a reference for everybody. I would encourage it because it's dramatic. It's funny. It's got some incredible acting in it. Just really, really beautiful performances from Timothy Oliphant and Walton Goggins and Margot Martindale and I mean a bunch of other people, but those three especially are just amazing in the show. And it's not about this stuff. Like I thought about, I was thinking about, I was like, what are shows that I really liked in the past that I could go back and watch? And you know what I decided not to go back and watch? House. Yeah. Yeah. I thought, no, not the right time. Love you, Hugh Laurie, but not the right time. So I didn't go back to House, but Justified isn't really about anything connected to this moment at all. It's just a really good story. And so I'm going to probably dive back into that.
Okay.
The other thing I've been listening, I found myself listening to this the other day, and this will be a hard to come by reference, and probably very few people will know this, but a couple of people who said they had listened to the first episode or the last episode of the podcast might know this band. I know you do because you introduced me to them. I found myself listening to Tun Bundle.
Oh, yes. And there's that's a pregnant reference.
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's like, so if Rob Bell had turned into a pop star instead of a religious pop star, then this is what would have, where he would have done it.
Right.
But it was fun. It was like good music. I liked it.
Now, do you still have the physical media or have you found it online somewhere?
I think I have lost the cassette now, which bumps
me out. Don't know where any of the physical media is.
But I did find it at some point and I was able to download it. So,
okay.
So I have it digitally. So, yeah. So, I was listening to that.
So, Tun Bundle being a college band.
Yeah.
For some youths at Wheaton College in Wheaton, Illinois.
Late 80s, early 90s.
Christian college, yeah. And they were kind of, you know, Christian college renegades, whatever that amounts to.
It was kind of jangle pop, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a, you know, a little bit of kind of smarmy irony and
a little bit. Yeah. It wasn't as, you know, that was, and maybe that's part of what I liked. It wasn't actually as smarmy as I thought I was going to remember it being.
Well, there you go. That's an interesting.
It was more earnest
recollection. Okay.
And that's, and I think that was one of the things, sitting there and listening to it, I was like, it was actually just pretty earnest. It was a little bit of, I mean, there were a few places where it was, like you said, young evangelical Christians pointing out the ways that the institutions are blind. A little bit of that, but more of it was just more kind of happy and kind of hopeful. And so,
well, so this is speaking of time and place, of context.
Yeah.
I bet it felt more, it could have more of an edge because of the fact that it was Christian rock music.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the context we were in at that time, or at least for me, the context I was in at that time, with, you know, being much more immersed in Christianity and having some desire to kind of push at what I felt were, you know, unnecessarily restrictive ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, they did a little, I think, here's what I think. I think that that stuff fit within that moment. So if you were that sort of person, you were, I was, some of the people that we know were, we were living in this evangelical subculture and finding some of the ways that it didn't fit well and was a challenge, or some of the ways that it was, again, it was kind of, it had blind spots. I think that this stuff fit within that, but it wasn't necessarily the most angsty part of it. Like, I think right. about some of the stuff that I wrote at that time, and I'm pretty sure that I was more angsty and more full of self-righteous indignation than just about anything on that album.
Yeah, you know, I can imagine that now that you have laid that out.
So I say, in other words, I say that I think Tom Bundle held up better than my columns in the campus newspaper. I'm willing to own that.
Well, I mean, have you reread your columns from the campus
newspaper? Not recently.
Do you have them? Would you be able to reread them?
I might have them in a box. At one point, I had them in a box somewhere, but I've moved several times in the last 10 years, and I'm not sure they survived that.
No, you can't put Brandon's columns in a box. No, columns in a...
That's correct.
Okay.
Right. Also, well, and then
may
I
want
think,
to edit that part out.
I think when I edit... No, we're going to keep that. We're going to keep that. It's gold. I think that when I donated all of my papers to the Crowell Library, I believe that their collection might include all of my columns.
Well, because I don't have any copies of anything that I wrote for the newspaper, the Moody Student.
Yeah.
Which they guess they rebranded it as the Standard.
Really?
Were you aware of that? Okay.
I was not
aware. I think now
that.
The Standard is gone. They've now cut it completely.
Oh.
Yeah. In the interest of being completely opaque.
That's weird.
Transparency, no. Let's go for opacity. Let's just get this. So it's, I don't know if I've thought about contacting the Institute and seeing if in the newspaper office, if they have old copies of, you know, or past issues.
Yeah.
Or any kind of archive.
Oh, they have issues.
Well, not that they'd admit to, but no, I'd like to see if they have any archived copies, because I am curious. Like, a few years ago, I was talking with someone, I had reconnected with them online, and this person made an indication that they had found a box of letters, you know, from when we would write back and forth to each other in college, you know, as people used to do.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I am certain I would not in any way want to read those. I can't imagine that, like, 19-year-old, you know, me at 19 was writing anything that I would now want to read or that I would get anything out of. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So. But I didn't have the advantage of an editor when I was writing letters to friends. So.
Right. And when you say friends, let's just go ahead and put this on the table. You were writing to Chuck Swindoll, and that's who your friend is that you were then catching up with again. All right. That's another reference that only a few people are going to get.
Yeah, I mean, are we just trying to get as obscure as we can?
Yes, we are. That's the goal. That's we're going to keep pushing it. So you all have Google machines, and you're all trapped in your houses. Just write down these names and then look them up. Yeah, you'll be fine. So, yeah, I think that's what I've been, like, I've been gravitating towards stuff that feels like it's not trying to be timely necessarily, and stuff that's earnest and sincere. Like, I don't really want to listen to any of the angry music that I have historically liked. I don't feel like I'm not having a Michael Moore moment, for example. So yeah, I just, because I feel like there's enough reasons to be potentially anxious or worried or stressed. I'm not, this is sort of like the reason I gave up watching shows like Law and Order a long time ago. I was like, I can't be entertained by like badness, even the rectifying of badness. I can't do it. So,
well, I think that the range at which something shining a light or kind of trafficking within that sort of negativity or realism or whatever, however you want to refer to it, it's a very narrow scope. Mm-hmm. I think it gets overused in the example, for instance, of like Law and Order. It's just the same thing over and over again. You know, I think a show like The Wire.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, that's not, you know, full of a lot of kind of positive viewpoints. Although there is, I think though it's a fixed enough period that it doesn't kind of overdo it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You find something. It's presented in a way that there's something you're taking out of those representations, as opposed to the representation simply being the message.
Yeah. And look at that. You're the one that made the Idris Elba reference this week. That was good.
I did.
Mm-hmm. Nicely done. Subtly stepping on my turf. Nice. All right.
So I will say this. And this is similar to what you were... I thought I would go back, and I had read The Myth of Sisyphus.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Albert Camus, I think I read it in that year between graduating from high school and starting college. Okay. And I had not read it since then. And I can't get a copy of it now from the library because the library is closed.
Right.
So I was going to listen to it as an audiobook. And something I learned is that not every book can be consumed as an audiobook.
Okay. I can see that.
Because there's so... Okay, I can listen... I can read, like, okay, the... you know, a science fiction series, like The Expanse. Mm-hmm. I could listen to some of those as audiobooks. That's fine. Something where I don't think I would go back and read Kierkegaard as an audiobook. Or Bonhoeffer. Or really any philosopher. Because I tend to want to go back over, reread things, stop and kind of digest what I've just read. Maybe sometimes as I read, as I continue reading, I might even go back a little bit because some pieces start to come together for me. You know what I mean?
Sure.
In audiobook, it's just going straight ahead and there's no really good, you know, contemplative opportunities. There might be people who can hear the words, and then they've got them fixed in their mind well enough that they can then just ruminate on them. I need those words in front of me to kind of continue to reference back as I'm thinking about what those words might mean.
Do you think that the fact that the myth of Sisyphus was being narrated by Jennifer Tilly, was that part of the problem too?
I want to let you know.
More of our series of the wrong people to read audiobooks. I'm sorry, you want me to know what?
I don't think I found that version.
You didn't?
The version I found, okay, so I was listening to this and I gave up. And it was... I'll admit it. I was like, okay, I can't do this. I will have to wait until the library opens up again. But then I went on to a book by Karl Ove Knausgård.
Yeah.
And it was the same audiobook artist, mm-hmm. is that what they're called, as The Myth of Sisyphus.
Interesting.
And his way of reading, I found that some of what I found some difficulty, I think, in listening to Myth of Sisyphus.
Yeah.
It did something, I think, unusual to how I was hearing and understanding Autumn is the book.
Okay.
So now I feel like I have to go and get Autumn as a, you know, physical book and try reading that and see without this guy's voice in my head sounding like everything is a pickup line or whatever it is he doing. I'm not sure. There's just a really unusual delivery. So, I mean, his voice is fabulous. I would trade my voice for his at any time, but... there's something kind of sensual about the way he reads. Which, as you can imagine, Myth of Sisyphus is not necessarily a sensual topic.
No.
Well,
I'm going to look, I'll look up who that was and then see if he's read other books that don't seem to fit that kind of reading style. Maybe he's read some of the Dostoevsky that I like, and I could listen to some of that. Yeah, that sounds good.
The Bible,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, some parts of the Bible, you know, having that nice sensual read is good. So, not all the parts. Definitely not all the parts. Okay, let's... why don't we take a break, and then we're going to try to... we're going to talk about what's sustaining our faith in humanity this week. It's not audiobooks, clearly, but we'll see what it is, and we'll come right back in just a minute. So we're back, and we want to end our time today by talking about, we're going to make this our segment, maybe, if it survives, what's sustaining our faith in humanity this week. And so I wanted to share something this week, because this was something I noticed during this last week. As I already mentioned, Zachary cannot handle being in the house the entire day. And so that's just not a reality. And so we do go out. We go for walks. But thankfully, the neighborhood is pretty bare, pretty empty. And so we can usually take a nice long walk and only have a couple of times where we have to cross to the other side of the road or go into the bike lane to give somebody some space. So, but it does happen occasionally, right? So mm-hmm. Here's the thing that I noticed that has been really hopeful for me, because in those situations where we're walking towards somebody else and now everyone is trying to do that dance where they're avoiding each other and giving each other enough space and kind of wide berth, in those encounters, I'm finding people making a lot of eye contact and even mm-hmm. talking to each other during those times. Now, when I thought about that, I realized that normally if I'm out doing those walks with Zachary or by myself, and I'm just walking down the street, I'm walking past other people, I'm walking right next to them on the sidewalk, I may at times look up and see them. We may make eye contact because we're making sure that we both know which way the other person is going or that. But usually no conversation, right?
Right.
And I'm actually finding that while we're having to be more physically distant, people are... I feel like there's a way that people are responding to that. Like intuitively, they're recognizing that that's depersonalizing. And so now they're taking the step of being a little bit more conversational, even as they're standing farther away from you.
Yeah, I've noticed the same thing.
And I like
and
that.
It's, I agree. That is a heartening behavior.
Because again, we're already having these things happen that are pushing us to separate corners and keeping us mm-hmm. apart from each other. And I hadn't thought about where that would go. But once I realized people were making an effort to talk to each other, even if they weren't being close, I realized that the alternative would be that we could be the same sort of kind of distant with each other that we've always been, but now also be physically distant. But people are swapping, and if we're being physically distant, then they're making more of an effort to be personal.
Yeah, I would say it's about 4 out of 5 people that we see on our walks.
Walks is a hard word to say.
That was just... And I did the thing you're supposed to do. Yeah. I completely focused on it. Yeah. And made it in a bigger issue than it actually was.
Yep.
The things that we're noticing on our walk is about 4 out of 5 people, even if it's a car driving by us, people are waving, nodding, saying hello.
Yeah.
And then there's that occasional person who just is not interested, and that's fine.
Sure. Because there are always going to be people like that. And there are some people that I see that, you can see that they're anxious.
Right.
And frankly, I mean, I'll be really direct. We get that sometimes anyway, because Zachary's walking down the street and he's not so much walking down the street as he is bounding down the street usually. Yes. And he's often vocalizing and people often look at him and his vibe and they're like, I don't know what to make of this. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always going to get some of that, but it's been really encouraging the number of people that can feel instinctively that they should try to humanize those distancing interactions. So that's good. I think we're going to make it.
I do too.
That's good.
No, I do.
Yeah.
I think it would take a lot more than this to strip away our desire to have community or civilization.
Let's just leave it a community, because civilization has been tearing itself down for a while.
Fair enough.
We'll save that for another time.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, at that, I think that we're going to say thanks for listening. And again, if you made it this far, then I'm hoping that means you thought it was interesting and not just macabre. So if you did find it interesting, then please share this podcast on Facebook or wherever you share things like that. If you listen on Spotify, you can follow the podcast and it'll let you know when a new one arrives. And again, feel free to check out our Facebook page, as Kevin said, Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. And if you got questions and some of the things we talked about today, we'll be on that Facebook page. But if you want to get in touch with us, some of you have done that through Facebook already and other ways. We love to hear from you and talk to you, and we just hope that you're well until the next time we talk. All right, Kevin, goodbye.
Bye-bye.